Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome once again, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, our good martini today might not at first seem like a good martini, but when we unpack it a little bit, people will get why we're making this the good martini. And that's that we've learned a little bit more about John Edwards, shall we say, more than a lot of people wanted to know. But given how prominent he was in the political world, it's probably important that we knew this, and it's probably better if we had known this a little earlier. Anyway, first of all, the government is ordering that John Edwards pay $2.1 million back to the government in matching funds that he over-received in his failed 2008 bid. Given all his other problems, the campaign is not challenging that, so there's another $2 million that they don't have to play with. Also, apparently Riel Hunter was not alone. We've just found out, thanks to the website DNA Info, that John Edwards was at least on one occasion a client of the recently infamous Manhattan Madam, Anna Gristina, and apparently arranged a tryst for Mr. Edwards in a New York City hotel in 2007, which means John Edwards was not only cheating on his cancer-stricken wife with Riel Hunter, he was cheating on his cancer-stricken wife and Riel Hunter with this woman in 2007, and who knows how many other times or how many other people. Jim, you have said before that anyone who voted for John Edwards needs to take the next two election cycles off. Are you extending that ban, much like the NFL is going after the New Orleans Saints?
Yeah, actually, now that I think about it, maybe it should be several more cycles in addition to this. Look, you know, let's face it. First of all, I think the real measure of a man is not whether he cheats on his wife, but whether he cheats on his mistress. You know, the bond between a man and his mistress is a special, deep bond. And you really shouldn't be, you know, you can't introduce distrust into that type of relationship. You know, on the other hand, I suppose John Edwards could say that by compensating the millionaire madam, I suppose we could argue this is something of a job creation program. He's doing his part to kind of stimulate entrepreneurship among young women. I can understand a certain scoffing that this is the good martini, but let me observe something. First of all, every Democrat you know voted to put John Edwards a heartbeat away from the presidency in 2004. And people say, oh, well, we didn't know about this. Well, come on. Some of us looked at John Edwards and saw the whole trial lawyer, John Grisham novel character persona, and just it just screamed phony. Anybody who just kind of feels the need to showcase how much he cares about everyone else, you can't help but wonder if they're attempting to overcompensate. And we've heard not only the examples of, look, the reason I nominate this for our good martini is not just the sex scandal. We knew that John Edwards and sex scandals. The taking matching funds that he was not entitled to makes this a financial scandal. And by the way, I'd really love to know how we live in a world in which a presidential candidate can get $2.1 million from taxpayers that he doesn't really deserve. I mean, how that works, I'd really love to see somebody examine. Because if you've got to ask me, where can we stop spending money? How about stop giving it to presidential candidates? How does that sound? That seems like a nice, easy place to start. But then you put all of this together and say that, look, the whole persona of Edwards was that he cared so much about people. That he cared about women. That he cared about poor people. Well, I think we can really argue the only person he really cared about was John Edwards. Certainly he had no problem hurting those people who were closest to him. Certainly he had no problem using people, as the memoir of his former aide tells. And I think one of the things that really kind of jumps out at me is the anecdotes from his former aide's book that talked about him really disdaining the people who he interacted with on the campaign trail and kind of constantly using his hand sanitizers and thinking of them as filthy and just kind of saying, oh my God, I can't believe I have to go out and, you know, shake their hand. Like, this was a man who actually fundamentally hated or certainly disdained all of the people he claimed to care about. And this is a persona that he's, you know, I think a very dangerous psychological mind. And the idea that he was at any point, you know, what's the old saying of 80,000 votes in Ohio away from being vice president and a heartbeat away from the presidency. I think this country dodged a bullet. And I think that, you know, politics and the power tends to attract some unhealthy personalities. And I think if you look at recent history, John Edwards jumps out as one of the most unhealthy narcissistic personalities to come along in a long time. So I would urge all of his former supporters to exercise a little humility, to recognize that we don't always know what's in a person's heart and their character, and that they, you know, got vivid, not just a little bit fooled, like those of us who supported, say, Mark Sanford might feel, but just vividly fooled. This was a guy who had, you know, was completely different on the inside and completely different in his real self than the image that was sold to the voting public. So thank goodness John Edwards is nowhere near this public office right now, and I think it's a reminder to people that not to put too much stock into the image that they are sold on the campaign trail.
So, the fact that he was never as close as he could have been and came very close to being to the levers of power is definitely good, given all the latest and who knows what else is out there, given everything that's piled up so far. And, of course, he still has a lot of legal issues to go through as far as his campaign and paying for the love child and the mistress and all that sort of thing. But on to the bad martini now, and that's a projection reported by CNBC and others that the tightening of the crude oil market is suggesting that all the factors are coming together that in a worst-case scenario, crude oil could be at $200 a barrel in the coming months. Now, we've heard prognostications like that before that didn't get all that close to being fulfilled, but apparently the conditions are a little bit more dire than those previous prognostications. Still, most folks think it'll probably fall a little bit short of that, but Jim, we're at $4 now, so and oil's at about $123 a barrel. That is crippling to an economy. Obviously, it would have political implications as well, but the impact on the economy would be absolutely horrific.
Yeah, as we've discussed the good martinis and bad martinis in these lunches, we've noted that, look, you know, when the economy recovers, it tends to be good news for Barack Obama, but it's also good news for the country. And when things in the economy remain, you know, ominous from now until Election Day, it's bad news for Barack Obama and thus arguably good news for conservatives and Republicans. But look, you don't want to see your countrymen suffer too much in the pursuit of a political goal. Well, $200 a barrel oil, that's just about a nightmare scenario. I mean, we saw stuff getting up, you know, higher than it was now during the summer of 2008. But apparently it's a couple of different issues. It's not like this is not merely, oh, if there's war in Iran or war with Iran in the Middle East, that would, you know, cause the price to spike. I mean, this is a couple other different factors. And I just kind of think that the, you know, this, if you think things are tough economically now, and let's face it, I've argued that we're going through what feels like a 4-year recession, we could see a very big bump in the road. Some of this is maybe overhyped. Some of this may be, you know, a little too much concern. But I think I just kind of think about it. You know, one, we're already feeling a big economic squeeze at, you know, in the neighborhood of $120 a barrel. Greg, okay, let's say it doesn't go to 200. 150 would be very difficult. 160, 170 would be very difficult. So the idea that $200 a barrel is even within the realm of possibility, extraordinarily ominous, and it's the sort of thing that has me drinking several martinis at once, Greg.
Well, it's a good thing the president's heavily investing in solar technology and has spent only a few $100,000 per job in some of these plants that he keeps touting, because clearly that's being fiscally effective as well. So good luck, everybody. Good luck. On to martini number three now, which may be one of the craziest ones we've had in a long time, and that's saying something. David Ignatius of the Washington Post has had some pretty unique access to some of the documents picked up in Abbottabad as a result of the raid that took out Osama bin Laden. And it turns out that Adam Gadan, who was born in California, is kind of the English mouthpiece of Al-Qaeda, has had some pretty strong views on American media coverage of Al-Qaeda. He expected, objective coverage of Al-Qaeda in the U.S. media. He thought there was relatively fair coverage from CNN, although he thought it favored the Afghan government to some extent. Loved MSNBC and was apparently very upset that Keith Olbermann got fired. And to be honest, you might expect he hates Fox News. So not sure that there's going to be a lot of lean forward promos or current TV promos with this plug from Adam Gadan, but kind of humbling, or at least it should be for those on the left.
Lean forward into the global caliphate. You know, here's the thing that jumps out at me about this. Because, look, this is not to say that MSNBC is pro-Al-Qaeda or anything like that, that Democrats support Al-Qaeda. But I'm just observing that if heaven forbid, they had said, and the favorite site for campaign news for Al-Qaeda is the campaign spot, I'd feel very, very unnerved and perhaps need to go vomit in a toilet or something. I don't want Al-Qaeda to be a fan. And in fact, if Al-Qaeda turned out to be a big fan of my work, I'd really have to seriously reexamine what I had done to get, you know, Adam Gadan. And look, he's advising bin Laden. And apparently he wrote up like whole memos of which networks were friendly, which ones weren't. It sounds a little bit like you and I kibitzing around the water cooler or something, except it's like this mirror image of this. And he talks about ABC News' Brian Ross. He says he's a very knowledgeable guy, but he complains that, you know, they will bring in analysts who will conduct a smearing of Al-Qaeda figures. Greg, when I talk about the smearing of Al-Qaeda figures, I want it to be their brain matter on a wall behind them. Brian Ross is a very good reporter, and it's kind of intriguing that that shines through to the perception of Al Qaeda. But he's not fair to Al Qaeda, and it's kind of fascinating that they lament that, you know, Fox News was not fair and balanced to them. In a way, if I'm Fox News, I'm putting that in my promos. You know, Al Qaeda's least favorite news to the point where, like, I'm quoting directly from Ignatius's column: "Let her die in her anger of Fox News." Gee whiz, you know, that's that to me is, you know, if Gadon didn't like me, that's the highest praise you possibly could get. So kudos to Fox News. You know, the other thing that was fascinating was that he was okay with MSNBC, but he was really upset about the firing of Olbermann. Now, you and I have made more than a few jokes about the low ratings for Current, Keith Olbermann's current employer, this channel, which is basically like one step above cable access, a very small viewership. But look, you know, Greg, it's, the mystery is solved. We found Keith Olbermann's viewer. It's Gadon. Somewhere there's a coat hanger attached to some, you know, cave in Pakistan somewhere, and he's watching this and he's saying, "Oh, finally, Keith, you're back. Tell me how this is going." That is my illustrious Adam Gadon impression, by the way.
Jim, have a great afternoon. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us, and join us on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.